welcome to episode 17 of the Masari Podcast. I am your host, Catherine Wu, and we are here weekly to deliver you short and sweet discussions of what we're thinking about in the crypto space. The biggest headline of this week is no doubt that Basis Protocol, which had raised $133 million from a lot of really credible investors just 8 months ago, announced that it was shutting down and refunding those investors. As Ryan noted in our newsletter, Unqualified Opinions, this week, this outcome isn't surprising. First, though, to clarify, a lot of this $133 million was earmarked to stabilize the currency at launch. If the team didn't deliver the protocol, the plan was to refund the collateral all along. As an update, Basis issued an official statement Thursday morning, citing U.S. securities regulation as the reason for shutting down. In the days and weeks ahead, I'm sure more context will be provided, and this also marks an interesting case to watch for publicly traded collateralized stablecoins. To read more of our analysis, make sure you sign up for Masari's Unqualified Opinions, our daily newsletter. Moving on to this week's guest, I had on Rhea Batoria from Circle Research to discuss being a crypto research analyst, and we also go into her latest deep dive report on prediction markets, as well as any advice she has for any aspiring crypto research analysts. We are here today with the lead research analyst for Circle Research, Rhea Batoria. Hi, Rhea.
Hi, Catherine.
Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Anytime. So I know Circle Research was officially launched just 2 months ago. So that was the second week of October. And since then, you've published a number of incredibly impressive and comprehensive research reports, including profiles on Qtum, Cardano, EOS, and you did a deep dive on prediction markets, which is awesome because from my understanding, you're pretty much the brain power behind all of these research reports. No big deal. Can you tell me a little bit about your research process, how long it takes you to do one, and what, if any, the most frustrating parts of the research process are?
Sure. So very loosely, I start the process off by reading about the project that I'm writing about. And I break down the white paper. I look through the blog posts of the project, if they have any. I skim through the Twitter and Reddit pages, which are actually fantastic sources of information and updates. And during this process, I note down questions that I have. And I reach out to the project or experts within Circle to help me answer those questions. And then it's just write. I would say it takes me a couple weeks to write and then a week or so to review per report. In terms of frustrations, there's definitely a lot. as you know, there aren't really that many great information standards for the crypto industry right now. So, you know, sometimes I find it really challenging to find answers to seemingly simple questions like when did the mainnet launch or has it even launched? What are the projects using their funds for and how many people are on the team? Or have they hit their milestones laid out in their roadmap? And I actually think that Masari's platform will really help address some of these information asymmetries.
I love that you're doing a plug for my company.
Well, it's true. And I just think this is something where we can add a lot of value for the community. Another huge challenge that I've come across is that some of these projects have multiple versions of their white papers. So there have been many times where I find snippets of the old papers on Reddit and Twitter, but when I go to look for the actual document, I find out that it's been taken down by the company. And I think Ryan actually tweeted about this yesterday and is trying to like compile all the papers, which would be really, really helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Have you ever had to abandon a research project or a research report because of this issue?
No, not really. I think usually there's a workaround, or if I reach out to someone within the project, they'll respond and help me clarify some of the questions.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's smart, but probably not feasible and hard to scale if you're trying to do it for, you know, more than just a handful. So your latest research report is a deep dive on prediction markets. And, you know, since I have you on, let's give our listeners a quick overview of the topic. So, you know, let's kick it off. What's a prediction market and how does it work?
Sure. So very simply put, a prediction market is like a financial market where you can create markets and trade in the outcomes of real world events. And participants can win or lose money based on the actual outcome. So because this is not really intuitive, I think it's best illustrated if we use an example. So say we created a prediction market in January this year saying, will the price of Bitcoin be above 20,000 USD at the end of the year? And we set an expiration date for December 31st, 2018. The two outcomes of a market like this are yes or and no, and this is a binary market. So at the beginning of the year, the price and probability of the yes outcome might have been 0.9 ETH, which means that the market thinks that there's a 90% chance that Bitcoin will be above 20K at year end. However, the price of the yes share today would probably be much lower, indicating that the market thinks the probability is much lower. So whichever party holds a share of the correct outcome at expiration of a market wins money. So if I put in 0.6 ETH and you put in 0.4 ETH on the opposite side, and you hold the share of the winning outcome, then you would get a total of one ETH per share, and I would get nothing back. So prediction markets can be valuable tools because they leverage a concept called the wisdom of the crowd to come up with a probability for a future outcome. So this means that they combine the knowledge of many people to cancel out individual biases, which results in hopefully more accurate and unbiased predictions.
Yeah, it's definitely a really cool concept, but what exactly are the benefits of a decentralized prediction market? And also along with that, what are the challenges?
Yeah, so I think that the key motivations behind decentralizing prediction markets was one, to lower fees, two, to make them more flexible, and three, to enable global participation. So first of all, because there's no central operator and each market creator sets their own fees, there's greater competition in creating markets. And in theory, this competition should drive down fees. Also, decentralized platforms are more flexible because there aren't really any limitations around the types of markets that you can create. So there are central platforms, like one of them is Predictit, and these are devoted to a specific subject area like politics. But users on non-central platforms like Augur or Gnosis can create markets on whatever topic they want. And then finally, they also enable global participation because, in theory, open blockchain platforms don't discriminate between users based on their jurisdiction. This is good because it should increase user diversity, which corresponds to less bias and more accurate predictions. But you know, many of these benefits will take some time to fully materialize because these platforms are still in their infancy and they face many barriers to adoption. And that brings us to your second question. I think there are a lot of challenges as it stands, but to name a couple important ones, I would say fees and FX volatility, and then just uncertainty around regulation. So on fees, right now, there are multiple steps that users have to follow to use the platform. So first, they have to convert fiat to ETH, and then they have to assume the volatility of ETH. And then there's the platform fees. And then finally, there's the gas fees that users need to pay Ethereum miners. So obviously, all of this combined degrades the user experience. And in the end, we don't really know if the total cost is that much lower, even if like the in-platform fees are lower. And then secondly, there's just a lot of uncertainty around regulation. So in the past, governments haven't really been very friendly towards centralized prediction markets. And I don't think that that will change just because some elements are now decentralized. So I think recently a CFTC commissioner actually commented saying that they've only permitted prediction markets in limited circumstances. And he thinks that decentralized prediction markets still raise multiple regulatory concerns. And then he also made some comments around like who should be held accountable, saying that he thinks it should be developers of the smart contract, which is a totally different debate for another day. But this just goes to show that decentralized prediction markets aren't immune to regulation by virtue of being quote unquote decentralized.
Yeah, totally. And some of these are definitely not challenges that are unique to prediction markets. I think there's always sort of this trade-off between decentralization and efficiency. And then, you know, and I think regulatory uncertainty is just something that I think affects the entire industry right now.
Yeah, I think both of these challenges are things that affect not just prediction markets, but like multiple dApps.
Yeah. So, you know, challenges aside, just through your research, what are the usage like on these platforms? And, you know, can you think of any other use cases beside betting and gambling?
Mm-hmm. So usage is still pretty low. I think the average 24-hour volume on Augur was about, or over the last 7 days has been about 130 ETH with about 23 users. And Augur is supposed to be like the most popular prediction markets platform right now. So, you know, I think in general, it's a very nascent platform and this is a very nascent application of blockchain technology. And I think that many of the challenges that we talked about need to be addressed on the core protocol level and on the application level before we can expect to see like a sustainable increase in adoption. But you know, if they're able to solve these challenges, then I think one use case beyond betting and gambling is that's been, you know, widely discussed in the community is hedging. So the idea is that now anyone can create a prediction market to offset their exposure to something. So one industry where this could be really interesting is insurance. So for example, an insurance company that's exposed to natural disasters could theoretically create a market saying, will natural disaster X happen this year? And buy shares corresponding to the disaster happening. If it happens and they have to pay out claims, then the idea is that profits from the prediction markets could help offset some of that financial impact. But I think that's still a far ways away.
Yeah. And I think you're exactly on point. And for those of our listeners who want to kind of read more into prediction markets, check out Rhea's report on this topic. It's circle.com/research. And I know Rhea's probably working to complete other reports before year end. I've seen her office and I imagine, you know, in my mind that you just kind of locked up in that room. So you turned
out. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So before we wrap up, just any word of advice for aspiring crypto research analysts?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I think the key thing is to read a lot, write a lot, even if it's just for yourself, and ask for feedback. You know, learn both sides or the multiple sides of the debates in the community before, like, establishing your stance. Follow crypto Twitter. I think some of the most enlightening conversations are being had there. And don't be shy to reach out. I think, you know, what surprised me most when I first started working in this industry is how willing people are to talk to you and help you out if you just show that you're passionate about the space. So, you know, definitely reach out.
Yeah, that part I agree with you. It's a really welcoming community. And I think part of it is driven by the source of like, by this culture of open source and collaboration. So that was a really sort of welcoming surprise to me when I was first getting into crypto as well.
Yeah, it's a very, very pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Rhea.
Thank you so much, Catherine. It was so great to chat with you.
And that wraps up this week's podcast. Thanks for listening. And as always, feel free to share your thoughts by tweeting at us at Messari Crypto. That's M-E-S-S-A-R-I Crypto. If you like this podcast, tell your friends about it. And don't forget to give this show a rating or even a comment if you found it to be helpful. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you all next week.